Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Under the Helmet.
You do your thing, all right? Don't be nervous, okay?
The show that looks at long-term player value in fantasy football.
It's the moment right here. We're going to have to decide what type of team we want to be.
Building dynasties each and every week.
I don't even know your name. What's your name?
Chad Parsons.
I'm telling you, man, you're leading the league in hydration.
I got a dynasty team reaping rewards for the next decade.
KD Flower.
You may beat me, but you will not outwork me.
Tim Torch.
There's only one winner, Chad.
Find their written and premium audio content at uthdynasty.com.
Playing it safe in Dynasty means you're going to lose.
Stop talking about it, man. Let's get this going right now.
Welcome to the Helmet, looking at some long-term player value in fantasy football. I'm your host, Chad Parsons, joined this week by none other than Tim Torch. He's back in the saddle. You hear him on select shows, especially the NFL draft show for UTH. We get everyone together for those live shows in late April. We'll do so again in 2021 here. But Tim, I for this week to have you on, wanted to talk about the Cleveland Browns because they've been a fascinating watch for two straight weeks in the playoffs. And some of the best storylines coming out of this past weekend was in that Cleveland and Kansas City game. So we're going to talk about that a little bit. But also, I think just the Browns' skill position players are some of the more fascinating ones at their respective positions in all of Dynasty. So we're going to kind of break that down. It's going to be a Browns-centric show. And again, who better to have on of the UTH quartet than Tim Torch here. And do want to remind folks, you can follow him on Twitter at TimNFL. You're also doing some work for Browns Wire. So, and you're in that area, lifelong resident. So, I mean, no one is more equipped to handle the peppering and the profiling that I want to do with some of these players and situations on that Browns team. But what were some of your thoughts watching this past weekend? What has the last 2 week run been like where you get the big win over a rival and then you go in and actually had a really good chance? It was kind of right there on the end of the diving board to steal a win against the Patrick Mahomes-less Chiefs and weren't able to get it done. I mean, what was the range of emotions over 2 weeks?
It was amazing. It's just for a lot of people who know me, they know I haven't been watching football that long, and I haven't even been a Browns fan for even less time. And I actually started really enjoying them when they were 0-16. Like I enjoyed watching the rebuild. I enjoyed watching them try to use analytics and have this war chest of draft picks and cap space and everything else that kind of at their disposal. And the Brock Osweiler trade and all the other stuff that they were just really using to acquire assets. And this was really a culmination of things because it was just, I feel like it was really easy for a lot of people just to say, same old Browns running into different obstacles because the COVID situation the week before, they didn't have their head coach, their offensive line coach. They were missing players left and right, like a starting offensive lineman. And that was huge. It was really amazing just to watch and kind of the progression of Baker Mayfield as he's, I don't want to say he's a top tier quarterback, but he's definitely not making the big mistakes like he was in 2019. You're seeing a little bit more of that second half 2018 Baker Mayfield. And then this week, the first half of the game, they were really carving up the Browns and the Chiefs were carving up the Browns, and it was just one of those games where I was like, oh, this is just going to be, you're just going to get lit up. It's going to be a situation where you really see the difference between the two teams. And then Patrick Mahomes went out. You saw just some struggles happen on offense for the Chiefs. And I was like, wow, this could really happen. So my emotion, I tried not to get too excited, but I definitely was kind of going up on the roller coaster, you know, really that part where you're going up the hill right before you drop down and that third and 14 run where Chad Henne just really
parting of the Red Sea, right? I mean, he turns the corner and there's no one there.
Yeah,
there was no one there, and you're like, oh no, because you thought he might get the first down on that play, or if not, he's going to get really close.
Yeah, it was just amazing to see, because, well, Chad Henne's not exactly known for his athleticism to start with.
Yeah.
And some of the passes he was throwing was probably some of the best football of his entire career. So good. And I did share on Facebook just that if the Browns can't make a stop against Chad Henne, they don't deserve to go to the AFC Championship game. That's not really where they should be. So I think this ride overall, it was unexpected, given all the changes on the team and everything that they had to put in place in a COVID season, as far as like training camp, installing a new offense, new verbiage, and then actually making it to where they did in the playoffs. The last time the Browns picked 26 in the draft or later was 1995.
Wow. What is that, Bernie Kosar?
That would be right around that time. Yep.
Yeah, it gets a little blurry there. The thing that struck me, like in the moment, but also looking back, it wasn't so much that, you know, they couldn't get off the field. We know about the Henne run. And then obviously, you know, the fact that they actually went for it on fourth down, iced the game there. And that, again, the Browns defense didn't hold. And I know that probably is going to be the focal point because that's the end of the game. But I really thought the fact that they were, the Browns previous to that had the ball, touchdown, takes the lead, maybe wins the game. And they had this sequence, I think it was near midfield, where they end up, where they're in comeback mode, but they get, they got stuffed on a run, they run two screen passes, and then they punt. And yeah,
there's about 4.5 minutes left.
Yeah, and again, it's not the punt part, because it was 4th and 10+. So that wasn't the part for me, but it was the, you know, trying to make sure, like, so get yourself in a position that you can actually go for a fourth down, make it reasonable. Right. Like, so either more of a commitment to run or again, like screens are very high variance. So I know they could bust open and you go for 10 plus, 15 plus yards, but it also has to work right in terms of, you know, if one little thing, you know, a little tip that gets in the way and then the receiver doesn't get a good look at the ball, it could end up blowing up for a loss. It could get tipped up and get intercepted. There's a lot of variance to that little specified play. And I really thought that, you know, run a crossing route, do something or run twice instead of once. Like, I thought there was a lot more variety they could have had. And I just really didn't like the fact that they did that and then punted the ball away where it felt like that was the chance for them.
Yeah, usually where they've been seeing success over the season is where they've had Jarvis Landry in motion and then
right. Kind
of that pre-snap motion, and then he's doing some type of crosser and getting into the open field. But for whatever reason, they drew up something a little bit different. And the one thing I'll say about screens, unfortunately, with the team, they do have two good running backs that do well with screens, but unfortunately just overall explosiveness is not that's really what's lacking. It's unfortunate because when Kevin Stefanski came to the Browns, he was really known for the screen game. He got Adam Thielen and Steph Diggs involved in screen games frequently when he was in Minnesota, but he just didn't really have the horses or the time to put in the offense the right way for the Browns to get that type of game going. I think it could have been a very different story if OBJ was still there.
Yeah. I mean, that seems like forever ago, but the fact that they've been without him, they've needed Donovan Peoples-Jones, Rashard Higgins has stepped up, but it just hasn't been the same. You know, that you forget
your
front line thoroughbred. Right. And we were kind of, you know, talking about how, he's coming off a down year, and we'll get to Beckham in a minute, but just that, you know, he hasn't really been himself, so to speak, but he still would have provided a new and dynamic aspect to that offense that they really were trying to cobble together without him.
Well, you did see it during the Dallas game, and right. Granted, it was against Dallas, but I mean, that's what you can see. That's what a number one wide receiver can do in terms of drawing coverage and really pulling people in.
The one thing non-Browns that I wanted to include that I thought was noteworthy news-wise was Michael Thomas. The report coming out that he's likely to have multiple surgeries with his high ankle injury, that he was playing through it, not practicing pretty much, even after he came back, trying to be a part of Drew Brees potentially, you know, this run that could be their last one, going to the Super Bowl, winning the Super Bowl, huge aspirations there for the Saints. And it was – I mean, you saw Michael Thomas that largely was not the same. And when something like this comes out, it always, to me, it's almost expected because some of these players that you've seen them perform at a high level, and there's not really a big reason to say, oh, well, now they're 36 years old and they should be eroding and all of these things. When they don't look like the same player, that's usually when something's going on, right? Like I think back to Devontae Adams played through an ankle years and years ago, and a lot of people got off of him because it's like, oh, you know, he's playing, he's doing nothing. And I think Ezekiel Elliott wasn't healthy this year. But what's your thoughts on Michael Thomas, where if you're looking at an environment with the Saints of no Drew Brees, and could that mean Taysom Hill's the starter? Is it Jameis Winston? Is it somebody else? But you get Michael Thomas healthy coming back. He's going to be 28. Where does he kind of fit in the hierarchy for you? Are you one that you say, look how dominant he's been, and I'm going to double down on that because now he's much cheaper? Or do you say, things are changing and he's coming off a down year?
Yeah, this is probably the territory I like to live in, as far as those discount quality guys. And just a shout out to the show that you did this past week was about the quarterback regression. And you had mentioned a couple of guys specifically that had profiles that were down for different reasons. And that's just generally where I like to buy, because as Jordan, I think, points out pretty frequently, when a wide receiver establishes themselves kind of in that higher end group, they're more likely to repeat. And I feel very strongly the same way, because just when you have a thoroughbred wide receiver, it's so easy to just have those guys or buy into those guys. And I feel like the price is probably going to be pretty cheap given this rookie class that we're going to be going into. I wouldn't be surprised if you had somewhere in the like 105-5 to 8 range, if you might be able to almost do a Michael Thomas straight up at some point during this off season.
Wow,
feels pretty crazy to say right now, but if you start flashing some names around like Devontae Smith, which we know people are going crazy for right now, Jamar Chase, granted, we may not do that. We may not advise that trade specifically, but when you start flashing those names out there, people are like, huh, I can get however many years younger, 6-7 years younger. And they're like, oh, I can just replace that. But as you and I have talked about so frequently on Patreon, I think specifically last week, it's not just about that age difference that really matters. It's about, you had mentioned the two lineup rule that you have where it's, what does your roster look like without this person in? What does it look like with this person in your lineup? And I gave the example of Travis Kelce. And if you do something similar with Michael Thomas, no matter who the quarterback is, I feel like in a normal year, you're probably still going to have right around 100 receptions for Michael Thomas, given the Sean Payton offense. And whether it's Jameis Winston, Taysom Hill, Jameis Winston had a great pass this past week. It was crazy. They split him out wide and then ended up throwing the ball back to him. And Traquan Smith, he hit deep for a touchdown. It's just amazing. So I do feel that Michael Thomas is a value going into this offseason, and I would definitely be willing to explore in your league. Granted, I said the 105 to 108, but as we say so often, just kind of test that out a little bit. I'm not saying that's going to hit in every league, but it's also a great area to work. If you could trade someone like Allen Robinson for, because he's going to be likely on an upswing, people are going to be hoping he lands with a good quarterback, Allen Robinson for Michael Thomas plus a little bit of juice or something like that. I feel there's a little bit of wiggle room where you can get that nice little slight upgrade on the back end.
Yeah, I was looking at this, and I mean, Michael Thomas, you're telling me you're getting a guy that's already had 4 wide receiver one seasons, and you're getting him for, you know, a low, you know, probably wide receiver 8, 10, 12, 13 off of a dynasty board, you know, in a startup draft environment. And, you know, if that's the applicable trade market, like you're saying, I mean, something non-elite first round pick from this year. And looking at it, I mean, so the fact that he has 4 wide receiver one seasons, I mean, the only guy back to the 1990s that stuck on 4 was Anquan Boldin. You know, all the other ones are still active. So we'll see, you know, AJ Green probably doesn't get another one, but Tyreek Hill, Michael Thomas, they're at 4, and they're likely to get 5, you know, and you just keep going. The odds are so pronounced that if you have 2, 3, 4 wide receiver one seasons, your odds are strong you have another one. Now, obviously, you are going to get every step of the way guys that stall out, and that's all you have. But they have a profile of dominating targets and dominating an offense enough for multiple seasons that that's going to continue until further notice. And I think that's probably the phrase that people need to use. And so for Michael Thomas, he's not the one thing is, and this, you know, we kind of talk about this on the Football Guys show a decent amount, is like, who are you building your roster for? Because Michael Thomas, if you draft him or trade for him, he's going down in value. Now, value meaning, you know, trade value, but your roster value, he's not going down, right? I mean, he might be good for another 3 wide receiver one seasons or something. But he could still be dropping that entire time in market value because he's 28 coming off of this year. Whatever he does next year, I would say it doesn't matter that much because he's not going up because he's going to be 29. And it's a young pedigreed wide receiver group right now with a lot of young stalwarts that have started producing. And probably not to Michael Thomas's level in 2021. But the point is, people are going to chase that. People are going to value that, especially when Thomas is going to be 29 next offseason. So again, yeah, this is the Keenan Allen type bucket, Mike Evans bucket, you know, that you can gravitate towards in 1 year. It's probably going to be Devontae Adams bucket, DeAndre Hopkins. All these guys get to 28, 29, they start slipping. And that's when you can find some pretty robust values. And Thomas feels like he has two or three things working in his direction to get a lot of discount. And it's already started. Like I said, I mean, he was wide receiver 1-2 in dynasty, and now you're seeing him at wide receiver 10 or so. And I think no matter what he does, he's going to be wide receiver 12, 15, 18, something like that next year in 12 months. You just have to ask yourself, you should be okay with it. But if you're not okay with slipping market value, he's definitely not the guy for you. Now, if you're one that I'm going to get him and I'm blending that, I still have some young wide receivers otherwise. And like, if that's you, and that you're going to blend your roster together, he's going to be a producer type, and you're going to have some other younger guys that could be your flashy types, your upside types, then I think it's going to work very well when you blend those together.
I think just one more kind of notch in what people are going to start talking about outside of this platform is that he's going to be 28 going into next season. And of course, the question are going to be, how many more, as you kind of alluded to, how many more productive seasons does he really have left under his belt? Well, the honest answer is probably he could have 3 or 4 more pretty damn productive seasons.
Well, he doesn't rely on overt athleticism anyway. He's just he's a get off of me. What is it? Can't guard Mike. It's quasi rhetorical because I think the answer is yes. Is he the best possession receiver inside of 15 yards in the NFL?
Got to be.
Yeah. So, I mean, and the fact that he just dominates that, I mean, he's not going anywhere. And I mean, the Saints not centering the offense through him still, it would just be, you know, a little befuddling. So let's get to the Browns. And can we start out with just, I want your rapid fire reactions to a few contract situations that I wrote down. So Baker Mayfield, the questions I wrote down, does he get the fifth year option for 2022 or this offseason, does he get a new contract that includes fifth year and beyond? What do you think his stat, or do they play him through it because he's still sort of on that TBD timeline?
At this point, those are the two really big options. I would prefer to see them try to at least gauge the interest of signing a new deal. I always feel like when they get ahead of these signings with quarterbacks a little bit early, it works out in the long run. I'm trying to think of guys like not necessarily Carson Wentz, well, at some point those deals get a little bit better. I'm thinking of like Aaron Rodgers, because you were able to sign him so early multiple times, and then Matt Stafford.
They don't get cheaper at the point.
Yeah, exactly. The longer you wait, you're just going to be running up against more guys that are, as soon as Baker Mayfield signs, even if he does have like a top tier contract, there's going to be someone directly behind him signing a bigger contract. So
you'd rather do that than the fifth year option, which would lock him in for 21. He's already locked in for 21, but that would, I mean, this is the offseason. You have to do the fifth year option that would lock him in for 2022.
Yeah, I've changed my tune a little bit because towards the first half of the season, I really had strong reservations about Baker Mayfield. I understand the offense was transitioning and probably I should have given him a little bit more leeway, but I was seeing a lot of boneheaded decisions that I didn't think a franchise quarterback should be making. However, second half of the season, I've been more than impressed just with how he's really conducted himself, how he hasn't been – there's two things. He hasn't been turning the ball over as much, but when I watch him throw the ball, I remember so many misses he would have high. It would be completely off target and wasn't anywhere near his guy. I felt like he really reined that in and was just putting together a really solid performance the second half of the season. I had very few questions where I was just like, what the hell is he doing?
And this is something that was a little jarring for me. Now, again, rewind to early in the season, and it looked better than this, than obviously when Odell Beckham wasn't playing. But I was surprised to see that you have Odell Beckham and you have Jarvis Landry. They combined for about $30 million yes. per year in salary crazy, right? over the next two seasons. Right. And the start of 2021 would be in doubt with Odell Beckham. We'll see about his ACL recovery. But he's wide receiver 7 in the NFL for his cap hit. So he's a lock for the roster in 2021, but there's no dead cap left in 2022 and beyond for his contracts. And then you have Jarvis Landry, who has a low dead cap in 21 and 22. If Cleveland were to decide to move on from that 14 plus million each of those years, for a run centric team and for a running back and tight end centric sort of offense and approach, that seems like an exorbitant amount of money for those two guys for how much. Even when if they're playing well, how much they'll likely get used compared to other teams where, you know, if you tell me Julio Jones and Calvin Ridley combined where it's $30 million, be like, well, I see that with how Atlanta plays. Like with the Browns, they spent on two, like they have two running backs that are kind of the focal point. They spent on Austin Hooper. Like it doesn't make sense a little bit versus, you know, they're both top 10 salaries at the wide receiver position in the NFL. And I'm sure they'll fade down a little with this offseason and, you know, guys like Allen Robinson, et cetera. But the point is very high compared to their usage.
Yeah. Something's got to break this offseason. Especially
is that
if
Landry
you wanna...
gone? Is that like, well, like, what do you think is the actual, if something happens, what is it?
Oh, I've heard so many of these, especially if you're a little bit more dialed into Brown's Twitter, because the conversation tends to be around, is a possession receiver worth it in Jarvis Landry? Is sure. I think what everyone keeps really holding on to is that he's a locker room guy. Like he's been a good part of the reason why the Browns like internal locker room has shifted so much. So what is the dollar amount of that really worth if, because he's essentially like a player coach and that's where the real rub is because you can't afford to keep paying both of these guys and pay Baker Mayfield, and then you have the whole offensive line, Wyatt Teller, who PFF has had as the lineman in the NFL this season. You just can't pay everybody. Unfortunately, I think it's going to be Landry that goes.
Is he going to go this offseason?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
I think they're going to start clearing the decks here pretty quick.
Well, because, yeah, like if you said, if they're going to negotiate now and not sort of, you know, prolong this another year or two with Baker Mayfield, then yeah, like you said, something's got to give. And they don't have a lot of places. I mean, Beckham is pretty much immovable, you know, right now for 2021 with the dead cap. So yeah, Landry feels like the one. So let's go back, you know, kind of quick hit this, you know, by player, by position, if you will, that you've got Baker Mayfield who bounced back this year. What's your dynasty assessment of him? You know, one quarterback, super flex of like sort of where he stands now and how things maybe look different than they did 12, 24 months ago.
I would put him in the Kirk Cousins type of territory. He's just right around that QB 12 to 14 range. Like he's not someone you're going to be super excited that you're starter, but he's going to be just, good enough to be a really quality quarterback too that you can rely on. Sometimes he'll give you a little bit of rushing, not too often, but he's going to be just someone who can at least give you a decent floor to put in that position.
Do you think he has the upside of Kirk Cousins?
Yeah.
Okay. It just hasn't happened yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because Cousins has two top six seasons and Mayfield hasn't really sniffed that yet. So
I would be curious if those, I mean more Kirk Cousins right now, because
the last two, three seasons. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think Kirk Cousins has been a top six since he's been in Minnesota.
Yeah. The last 3 years, he's been 12 to 15, sort of that, that type of range.
Yeah. That's kind of what I meant.
Okay. Yeah. I am notably down on Baker Mayfield. and a lot of it is that just to me, it's about ceiling. And that that floor has a role. Like, do I think in a year or two he still has a starting job? Probably. Is it a lock? No. I mean, this was kind of an outlier year for him because, I mean, especially with the interceptions. I mean, his interception rate, and I track it per incompletion, it was 3.1% lower, which is huge. It's the biggest one in the NFL of the difference from his career rate to what happened in 2020. And to me, like, he's the other guy. Like, the sample size is bigger on the other side of this number than the 2020 side. So it's not like he was a first-year starting quarterback or second year or whatever. But like to me, that's a big number. And so, again, of the 38 quarterbacks that to qualify, you know, of a decent sample size this year, he was the most below his career rate. And I just – for guys entering year four, which that's where he's going to be for 2021, without a top 12 season. And he's had some obviously QB2 level seasons, but now even the 101s of the NFL draft, they're about a 25% bet to get to top 12. And that to me isn't very good. He's got some heat right now, partly because of the Browns' success. It's a bounce back year. He sort of has that momentum factor, but man, I mean, pretty much the only guys that have since the 1990s that have turned into top 12 guys going forward with a similar start, Drew Brees, and I think we can say he's not Drew Brees, and then Alex Smith had one rogue year deep in his career when he hit that sort of stratosphere. So I think Superflex is going to be where you have the decision and start one. Quarterback, especially in Mayfield's zone, is pretty low stakes. So if you have him as your backup, you just sort of shoulder shrug and say, whatever. Or if you've got him in a committee with somebody else, you're like, all right, I'll play some matchups. And like, you know, you'll probably shoot for some upside at some point with a rookie, or, you know, maybe you'll make a trade to upgrade if you're a contender trying to get a higher level veteran that has some real upside. You know, Aaron Rodgers was a good example this past year of people trying to target. Maybe you target Dak Prescott or, you know, something like that. You could find more upside for a low price. But I think Superflex is where you have to make a big decision on Mayfield. And I think there's some, I wanted you to weigh in on some of these trades I saw in Superflex for Mayfield, because you're more bullish than I am. So I just wanted to kind of see where's the line here for you. Mayfield and Sammy Watkins for Jordan Love, Antonio Gibson, and a third.
Oh.
So if you've got a couple other decent quarterbacks and okay, Mayfield's sort of in that mix, let's say he's your QB 2-3, is this the type of trade you would consider?
Yes. Oh yeah, for sure.
Okay.
Yes.
And then how about this is a two tight end league. We've got Baker Mayfield, a third and a fourth, for Devin Singletary, Marcus Valdes-Scantling, a second, and Irv Smith.
Oh, this is still Superflex?
Superflex, two tight end.
Oh, I would still take Baker Mayfield.
Okay. Yeah, that's the one that was quizzical to me. I'm not a big Irv Smith fan, so I wanted to see if you were higher on him, because he obviously is, just for some, he's top 10 to 12 at the position. He's not for me, but if he is like tight end 10 for you and a two tight end, then I think this one becomes interesting. And then finally, two guys close to home for you, Baker Mayfield for Joe Mixon.
Oh, I think you could get more on the Baker Mayfield side. I would still market value is always what I would look at here. I feel like Joe Mixon is probably going to be a little bit higher than Baker Mayfield, and you could probably get a little bit more juice there. But I would still probably prefer the Mayfield side, because I'm just dropping Mixon like a rock.
Oh, are you?
Okay. Yeah. That's a tough one for me to buy into. I mean, unless the discount's really there, it's got to be like a super crazy discount.
Okay. All right. What are your thoughts on Mr. Nicholas Chubb?
You know, it's just overall, I would love to have him or Kareem Hunt as a running back too, because I think any given week they could both give you like 20 plus points. But the problem is any other week they could really put up a stinker for you. It was nice towards the end of the season. You started seeing Nick Chubb being more involved in the receiving game. I was actually pretty surprised about that, especially against the Steelers. They got him on a screen that went for a long touchdown. It's just nice to see that that's in the bag of tricks that they're willing to pull out. It's just how often that type of stuff really happens. And also the nice part is that if something were to happen with Kareem Hunt, then you just really know what that upside is.
Unfortunately, with Nick Chubb, I mean, we're talking about a guy that could, you know, push for the NFL lead in rushing yards any given year. And yet you just use the caveat, well, if the other guy is out, like that's not really what you want to hear, right? I mean, you don't hear that with Christian McCaffrey or Jonathan Taylor or, you know, Barkley when he comes back, Alvin Kamara. So you're not going to hear it with other guys of that, you know, Dalvin Cook. You don't hear it with guys like that of like, well, hopefully the other guy's out. So that's like one thing that it was stark. And there was that show, I think we discussed, I think it was Running Back Roundup, where we went through, you know, Running Back Festivus. We're talking about all the things that disappointed us on each depth chart. It's like a month ago. And I think I pulled this stat out then or something close to this, where it was just the fact. So Nick Chubb is 14th in the NFL in rushing attempts, but 67th in targets among running backs this year. And last year, when you have Kareem Hunt that played half a year, basically, Chubb was running back 3 in rushing attempts, but then running back 21. So still, again, he's been a carry-centric guy. And Kareem Hunt showing up and still being there, and he's going to be under contract longer than Nick Chubb. I mean, he's under contract for 2 more years. So this is Hunt's a 2023 free agent, Nick Chubb 2022. So this is not going away. So I like what you said about, you know, I like either one of them as my running back 2, because they're a lot closer in points per game than the Nick Chubb fans would like, for sure. And, you know, Hunt is used a lot of times when they get in the red zone. He's used a lot in the receiving game. And, like, there's just so much that stunts Nick Chubb based on them having Kareem Hunt. And this isn't going away. And Chubb's age, he's going to be 25.7 this coming year. And, you know, he's on the older side when you look at a lot of the top 10, 15, 20 running backs that are 22, 23 years old. And that's a big difference. 2-3 years at running back land is a big difference. And when you say Chubb has this usage ceiling, and I think he's going to have a ceiling of, is he ever going to get to a top 5 season? He's going to get to a top 5 season whenever it matters, like in the next couple of seasons, because then he's going to be 27, 28 years old, and there's going to be some massive age discounting going on. So I have a lot of questions. I think that I'm below market on Nick Chubb. I like him as a player, but I think I have him outside my top 12, which I think might surprise some folks, but I just think there's a lot of 22, 23 year olds that have really quality resumes. And there's a lot of 25, 26 year olds that don't have these questions.
Yeah. I think the part that gets a lot of people is, I think a lot of running backs coming out of Georgia were younger than you expected. Like DeAndre Swift was pretty young coming out. Right. Todd Gurley, when he came into the NFL, he was a little bit younger. Sony Michel, I think, is the exception. But when you think of Nick Chubb, he was not one of those early guys. He came out kind of right on time. And I think he came out at 21, 22 already. So by the time he gets to that second contract point, he's going to be 26, 27. Yeah. And that just really saps all the longevity out of a running back. And he has his own question marks. I mean, I know he's one of those guys where you look at next gen stats and he's always towards the top of one of the fastest runs of the week or something like that. But he went through a pretty significant injury of his own. And I don't think I'm willing to just turn my head at that, especially after the swift decline we've seen from Todd Gurley.
Yeah, I think some of the decisions in terms of the hierarchy of running back and just assets, you're going to have to decide is Chubb versus, let's say, 101 in a non-superflex league, which that'll be, you know, the top wide receiver. That could be Travis Etienne, Najee Harris. So that'll be a decision. Antonio Gibson. Derrick Henry, who's older, but you would say, you know, doesn't have some of these question marks. David Montgomery. I think all these Chubb versus are good questions and interesting decisions that folks in startup drafts or in the trade market are going to have to decide between. I actually saw Nick Chubb and DeAndre Swift straight up trade in the last couple of weeks, which I thought was interesting on both sides. What side are you on that one?
Swift. for okay. sure.
And then another one I thought was interesting was Nick Chubb and Denzel Mims for Alvin Kamara and a second. You got to really be a Mims fan there.
Wow.
But Kamara does have some questions, you know, going into this offseason. He's a little older, but it's not really a noticeable difference there with Nick Chubb. Any final thoughts on Chubb?
Yeah, it's if I had him, I would probably explore the trade market just to see what that looks like. If you're right around the 101, probably in this class more like one in a super flex league 102, 103, so you can get that top running back. That's probably what I'd be willing to sell for. And my guess is you could probably get a nice add-on piece to that as well.
Okay. Running out of show here. Of the other players for the Cleveland Browns, whether it's Beckham, Hunt, Landry, Hooper, Njoku, who would you like to focus on so we really give them some good love and scrubbing?
You may not like it, but I think Joku is just someone that I think deserves the love.
Yeah, let's give him some.
I personally feel like the Browns made a mistake bringing in Hooper. David Njoku was probably had his best season as a pro this year. He had flashes before he was injured last year of really taking that next step. And I would like to see the Browns move on from Hooper and kind of install Joku as the tight end one on that team.
Man, you are, you know, you're saying the phrases that pay, man. This is exactly what I think. That why do you draft a first round tight end to get all the juice from that, you know, as long as you can before a new contract. And they're still in that window, and yet they just backed up the Brinks truck. And like you said, offensive line, Baker Mayfield, what are they doing at wide receiver? You know, they got a number of things, hopper items with contracts, and yet now they got this albatross of Austin Hooper where, you know, he's a roster lock basically for the next 3 years with their dead cap situation.
Sure.
And he still doubled down and got Harrison Bryant. Like, see, that's the thing. Like, so you make a good pick in Harrison Bryant, but guess what? It doesn't matter because now you have Hooper for an egregiously high price. I will say Austin Hooper made one of the, two best catches.
Oh, that was crazy. Yeah.
1 inch. he got two edges of his gloves on that. And it was a big play too. But again, he's closer to just a guy, you know, in terms of impact. Yes. And I just remember all the fights Keith and I had on Austin Hooper versus Hunter Henry in that draft class. And the trump card I always used was, well, I can get Austin Hooper later. Like that was always my thing. Like, at least I'll get him later. So even if I'm wrong, I spent a lower pick, but who knows? That thing has oscillated back and forth 5 times since we had all those fights. But yeah, man, David Joku, like, first round tight ends that don't turn into top 12 yet, they still have really good odds. Hayden Hurst is in that bucket. David Joku's in that bucket. And Joku looked good this past week. He had a couple. Like, you start the game and you're like, who's the guy with the big tight end contract? Not this guy. but yeah, like, to me, he is a very good buy in one tight end and two tight end because, I mean, you can get him for, ideally, you get him for like a fourth one tight end. I saw him dropped in a couple spots where it was like 24-man rosters later in the season, so you can get him for free. You know, you pair him with another tight end that's probably a little more startable, and he's like your stash guy. And if you got to throw him in, we had a league where we started him a couple times this year as just a complete dart throw because he's getting used around the goal line. So, but I think in two tight end is where the pedigree and the probabilities are in your favor. That if you can get him for like, I'm just speculating, I didn't see any two tight end trades with him, but like, if you can get him for like maybe a late second, I mean, that sounds, if he's going for like a mid third to a fourth in one tight end, I would think later second is probably about where he lives in a two tight end league, but he still has good odds to, again, I mean, the consensus right now, I think, is closer to tight end 30, and I have him around tight end 20. And tight end 20, people might go, are you categorically nuts? But again,
the juice is there. There's so much juice.
Yeah, like he's that classic late bloomer. He came in and everyone said, oh, he's raw. You know, he's going to need some time. Well, guess what? Now he's got time. He's going to be 25. He's still going to be just 25. He's younger than Mark Andrews. Like, so I don't think people are giving him enough time. And I know people buried Eric Ebron and he's on a slower track than Eric Ebron. And he probably does need a team change. He probably will get a team change is probably how this plays out with Hunter, Harrison Bryant there, and the fact that they can't get out from under Austin Hooper. Something's got to give. And unfortunately, it's probably going to be Joku moving on. And unfortunately, Tim's probably going to see him play his best ball somewhere else.
Yeah, I kind of mentioned a little bit earlier the idea of explosiveness and trying to stretch the field a little bit more. And that's really where I would like to see them go. And I mean, Njoku was just such a – he made such a leap this year. And to start the season, he was requesting a trade. I knew that wasn't going to happen because there was zero value and they couldn't have got anything for him. Going into this offseason, I'm expecting him to once again double down on that and say, trade me, or I'll sit out next year. Unfortunately, that's just kind of where it is. But he is kind of a – he is a key. He's just one of those players that I would love. I love having on my roster. Jordan and I also have him in a spot that Jordan is not a fan that I went with him over someone else pretty early in a tight end premium draft a couple of years ago. And it's just one of those things. I see what he can do. This year, he really started putting a lot of things together. And I hope he does get an opportunity in or out of Cleveland, because I think the guy can ball. He's great. He's a lot of fun to watch.
And now that it is the off season, where can folks find your additional content? We already mentioned on Twitter, but you're on Browns Wire and you also do some consulting work.
Yeah, I really don't do much consulting work during the off season. Okay. But I do help out during redraft season with draft day consultants. So that's always a lot of fun, just meeting new people and helping them through their redraft leagues. Had a lot of winners this year. A lot of people made it to the championship game. So that was a lot of fun. And Browns Wire is the other place. I do have a lot of fun talking about the Browns. I think that's, I kind of mentioned Browns Twitter earlier. There's a lot of smart people in there, and I definitely don't take the cake for being one of the smart people there, but it's just a fun place to hang out.
Excellent. And Tim, we'll mix in on this show from time to time, but you can find him every single week pretty much over there at patreon.com/UTH. We do the weekly feature podcast together. We've been doing that for a while now. It's been at least since the start of this season and then probably even beyond that. But there's a ton of stuff we've been doing. I've been doing some bonus podcasts during the playoffs of pretty much doing like a film notes recap of every playoff game. And then the team that lost, you know, kind of doing an off-season preview show, and I'll probably do that again this coming weekend. There's a VIP chat that you can be a part of at one of the higher tiers. I do some VIP strategy sessions a couple times a month in the off-season, just some bonus content and additional avenues to get more UTH and get a whole lot of Tim Torch and myself, especially on that weekly show where folks vote on topics. And we do the waiver wire in season, and in the off-season, obviously, we can roam with a lot of just kind of macro dynasty topics. And I'm sure we'll also get into a bunch of rookies and startup drafts and all that type of stuff between now and the NFL draft. So you can find us there. And again, that's patreon.com/UTH. And of course, flagship, become a general manager plus subscriber, get all the 250 plus premium podcasts that UTH offers at uthdynasty.com. And again, all the rankings are updated, got the UTH big board, need to update it. We have about three or four players that did not declare going back to school. But that 1.0 big board, super flex board, you got some two tight end adjustments with Kyle Pitts way up there for those different types of formats. New dynasty rankings scrubbed historically for 2021 and beyond. So a lot of exciting stuff going on over there that, again, have your best off season and best season yet. So you got Tim Torch, Katie Flower, Jordan McNamara, and myself doing a variety of different things that you can find over at UTH and then over at Patreon. So that's going to do it for us. And until next time, never settle, refuse to be average, and keep building those dynasties. But at least it'll make things fun till the draft.
Do you want to talk about the new Marvel show that's out?
I don't even know what you're saying.
Okay.
I know what Marvel is. It's a verb when you marvel at something.
Yes, it is.
That's one bit. Like, that might be our biggest divide as people.
Yeah, Probably.
The fact that you are like one of those people, and I'm not saying it's bad. It's not bad at all. Like, you are a superhero movie like connoisseur, right? I mean, you know your ass.
I like the movies a lot. I'm not like deep cut comic book guy.
Did you grow up and really love Star Wars? Like, did you really love those movies, or was that kind of before your time?
No, I didn't. I haven't seen the first three movies.
You buried the lead, Tim. You're into all these movies and you haven't seen the original three Star Wars. So you've seen the other ones. You've seen the crappy ones.
I've started watching them, and every time I go to watch them, I fall asleep.
See, I have an excuse. That's me with the Kenneth Branagh Hamlet. I couldn't get through it in high school. I had to watch it. I tried three times and I just gave up. It's like 4 hours long. But you can't watch the original Star Wars. See, I had one of my best friends, like family friends when I was growing up, loved Star Wars. And it was right in our heyday. I mean, they came out and we were like, I mean, when we were kids, it was like in the mid 80s. So it was like right in our wheelhouse. But I did not get it at all. I still don't really get it.
I understand. And I think I actually enjoy like the second level of like, I watch the shows, and then I do have a podcast or two that I listen to that actually breaks down the second and third level stuff that I don't know. Yeah. And then I go back and watch it again. And I'm like, oh, that's really cool.
That's deep. Yeah, yeah,
it is. Okay. It is. I don't know. It's just one of those things I really enjoy. It's an escape for me. I have like.
So are you one that rewatches the movies a lot, or do you you really enjoy them when you watch them in the theater, or you first watch them on TV or whatever?
Both. When theaters were open, I definitely went to as many like opening nights as I could.
You didn't dress up, did you?
No, nothing like that.
So you're removed. Nothing. And you're not like. It sounds like you're not big into like the trivia. Like, you don't have like movies memorized and like whole storylines and like,
no,
all this
nothing
type
like
of stuff.
That. No. But
you just really enjoy them.
Yep.
Did you have action figures as a kid?
A little bit, yeah.
Superman, Spider-Man, Batman.
Yeah, I did have a lot of comic books. Superman was my guy growing up. Green Lantern. I was a big Green Lantern guy.
So you lived through the comic books a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you still have all those comic books, or did you get rid of them? Or
I lost a lot of them in a fire that we had in our house.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. When I was in college, we had a fire, and
Do you still do comic books, or I think, what are they called? What's the term for like the adult books that are
graphic novels?
Graphic novels. There you go. I always thought those were inappropriate novels, but apparently graphic implies to the graphics.
Yeah. Well, it applies to, it's a culmination of like multiple comic books on a specific subject. So I remember like the first one I ever got was Death of Superman, and it had like the whole Doomsday arc. And it was pretty cool. It was very memorable.
So they just go off on tangents and kind of create secondary storylines or what if environments, like Back to the Future 2, where they go back in time and then it's a parallel reality. Okay. That type
of stuff. And also for me, I had a lot of trouble reading as a kid.
So that was more accessible to you?
It was easier for me to follow.
Well, it also probably got you more motivated, right? Because you were interested as opposed to some dry book with no pictures and, you know, it was written in probably a more adultish way that was less entertaining for you than Superman or Batman or whatever. Wow. Very cool. Learning something new. Fun times with Tim.
Yeah.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.